Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I've worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly or to not put our hearts into an activity means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different aspect of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart and mind into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and the stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best, and be well, Ron. Episode 20, Thinking Through Relationships with Heart and Mind, Part 1 of 3. This episode begins with the story of a girl who is severely depressed. If you're listening with young children, you might want to pause it now and listen to it later. Kendra came to my office after being evaluated at the emergency department. She was seen there because she had threatened suicide and had been cutting herself. They deemed her safe enough to go home with follow-up at my office for further evaluation and treatment. This 13-year-old girl came to the office with her father. I didn't know her, and at first I was impressed with how sweet she seemed, how well-groomed she was, and how well she seemed to get along with her dad. I asked, "Kendra, what happened that hurt you so much that you cut yourself and also considered ending your life?" "I've been bullied in school." "Oh, yes, two girls have been bullying me." After listening to her story as fully and as completely as I could, I thought of everything I knew about bullying, and then I shared my thoughts with her. People who bully others aren't happy inside. If they were happy, they wouldn't want to hurt anybody else. They probably have terrible things going on in their own homes, and they figure if they're miserable, they have the right to make somebody else miserable. The way they see it, though they might not be fully conscious of this motive, by hurting somebody else, they feel better. People who are bullies don't have a good long-term outcome. Unless something dramatic happens to turn their life around, they really are doomed, through the relationships they'll develop, to have a miserable life. I then thought for a moment and said something I hadn't thought about saying. "This isn't an issue you should have to deal with. It's something the adults should take care of. I will write a note to the school and tell them this bullying has to stop. Not only are they responsible for your education, and as we know in this day of COVID, they're responsible to keep their students healthy, they also have to make sure the students have a safe psychological environment. They can't let this happen." She seemed pleased at that, and then a second thought came to mind, one I'd never thought of before. I asked her, "Is what these girls say to you true?" And she said, "No." "You mean that what they're saying isn't really something that goes to your core?" And she said, "No." I said, "Ah." then we have something completely different. Instead of this being something to tear you apart, it's a nuisance. It's like having bees at a picnic or ants swarming. It's not about you, but it does make the picnic unpleasant. What they do isn't something that should necessarily destroy you. It simply makes the school environment a place where you don't want to be. I described a time when I was her age, and I was also bullied. We had gone to a resort in the Catskill Mountains, what's called a bungalow colony, where families rent cabins and make use of available facilities, a pool, a lake, and a clubhouse. We went for the month of August, the second half of the summer, while most of the families who were there had already been there for July. After a few days, the kids who were my age shunned me. They wouldn't talk to me for the rest of the summer. I never knew what exactly happened, but I knew I didn't do anything to deserve this kind of treatment. I couldn't tell my parents because they would have gotten too heavily involved and it would have been uncomfortable for me. So I spent that summer alone, doing whatever I could to enjoy myself. It made for an unpleasant summer, but I always knew that it wasn't about me, so it didn't make me question my value. As I look back now, I can only imagine that some of the kids who had been there felt threatened at the possibility of my potentially breaking up their friendships. I then wound up our conversation by telling her that an antidepressant could help you to get through the worst of this. I can prescribe medication if you think it would be helpful. She looked at her dad and said, "No, I'm okay." And her dad agreed. I said, "Well, listen, if it turns out that at any time in the future you feel that this problem is getting bigger and that medication would be helpful, let me know." I tell this story because it highlights several aspects of thinking through a relationship with heart and mind, ones that will help us in our own relationships. Had I only used my intellect when I went to see this girl, my approach would have been to assess how depressed she was, to think about whether medication would be beneficial in taking the edge off of her concerns, to tell her about the medication, its potential, and its side effects, and to develop a plan for follow-up. But I wanted more than that. As I thought with my heart, I also wanted to see if I could help her with her problem. So the first thing that I did was I listened as fully and as completely as I could. And then I thought with both my mind and with my heart. After listening, I called back everything that I'd learned about bullying and tried to use that to take the sting out of what had been happening. I continued to think with my heart about how I could help her. Two thoughts came to me and almost surprised me as I said them. These thoughts could be called inspirations or intuitions, and they seemingly came into my consciousness on the wings of love. One was the idea of sending a letter to the school saying this is an adult problem, not a child's problem. You should fix this. This, I thought, would help relieve her of some of the burden she was carrying. The second was asking whether what was said about her was true. These ideas, born of the heart, were so powerful that in the end, she felt she didn't need medication. In my medical practice, I use my knowledge and understanding of illnesses to help figure out problems and to treat them. I saw a 3-year-old the other day whose mother told me that when he ran, he stopped to catch his breath, and then he went on and played again. It sounded like he could be having what's called exercise-induced asthma. I spoke to the mom about that. She said that she had asthma as a child. I developed a way to assess whether this was indeed behind his problem, and with that, I had an idea about a treatment plan. I do the same when I think with my heart. I can develop ideas and test them in a way that matches what I do with my intellect. One idea that I developed in this regard is the idea that as human beings, we simply want to be recognized, acknowledged, and appreciated as we are and without being judged. I'll show how I develop this idea into a concrete reality and then test to see whether the idea is true or not. Here I'll do this using two very different examples. It's my impression that parents who are home with their children don't feel the recognition that they deserve. So I try to lend support to such parents. It takes a very different kind of thinking to appreciate what someone does at home. In one episode, I described this difference as the difference between the world of being and the world of doing. We're used to the world of doing, and we get our accolades from that. We can talk about the number of projects we finished at work or the number of things that we did. When we're home, then we're living in the world of being. If Mrs. Rembrandt, for example, came home and asked her husband what he did that day, and he said, "I worked with blue. I was going to do yellow, but I really couldn't." If that were looked at from the world of doing, it wouldn't sound like he did a lot. But this is Rembrandt, who is home with some paintings. A very different experience comes out of understanding the world of being. I continued to think about this idea, and while I was talking with a parent one day, I came up with a fresh new image that came to me out of my wanting to offer genuine recognition, appreciation, and support. I said, "Suppose at the end of the summer, somebody said to the son, 'What did you do this summer?'" The son might have said, "I started in the late spring with a tomato seed, and I warmed it, and soon a little sprout came out of the ground. As I continued to warm it, leaves developed, and then over time, it was a big bush, and this bush had flowers on it, and the flowers became fruits, and these rich, tasty fruits then had seeds for the next year." The person listening would feel like, that was a very productive summer. If, on the other hand, that same person said to the son one day, "What did you do today?" The son might have answered, "I shined." That's what parents do when they're with their children. They shine. I could inwardly sense that I struck a receptive note. The parent also said to me, "Thank you so much for that. It's just what I needed today." I also use this approach of recognizing someone when I see children for their physicals. I start out with them sitting on the exam table, and I talk to them about various aspects of their lives. I get a sense of what's going on with them and see if there are any areas that are problematic or areas of great interest to the person. Where it seems like it might be helpful, we'll have a further conversation. One day I saw a 15-year-old who I hadn't met before, and he was in for his physical. His parents couldn't make the visit. He was brought in by an older sister. As he sat on the exam table, he looked at his phone. At one point, his sister got quite upset, told him to put his phone away. He didn't, and she got up and took it away. He got down, took it back, and I decided not to make a big deal out of it. I had looked at his chart before going into the room and saw that he was a hardworking student who had gotten good grades. He had a nice smile, looked very athletic, and also looked like he had social skills. And I said these exact things to him. I said, "I have the impression that you are really quite a solid person. You work hard in school. I imagine you're an athlete. You seem very sociable. I imagine that you have a lot of friends." One of the things you might not know is a lot of people look up to you. They recognize the rare combination of somebody being studious, a nice guy, someone who enjoys having fun, and an athlete. They look up to that because that combination is just so genuine. If you continue to be who you are and work hard and don't let others get under your skin and stop you from being yourself, you will have an excellent and rewarding life. Even though he didn't look at me, I thought he was taking in my words. I sent his sister out of the room. We continued to talk a little bit. I went on to examine him. And then after the visit, we walked down the hallway to the printer where there was a form for school for him. And as I gave him the form, he looked up, smiled at me, and gave me his fist for a fist bump. He was saying thank you. He had heard what I had to say. Each morning before work, I prepare myself both intellectually by going through all the charts of the patients that I'll see that day and also with my heart. I go through some of this preparation in episode 9, Rethinking Stress with Heart and Mind, as well as in the bonus episode that follows, episode 9A. If you haven't listened to those in a while, you might like to listen again. When I get to the office, and before I get out of my car, I close my eyes and ask love to join me. Then I'm ready to go into the office. Besides going through each chart, I also clear my mind so that I am there fully and totally for the person I will be seeing. I mention this because we have the same potential in our day-to-day lives. Sometimes we have specific schedules and we know who we will meet in a given day. But there are other meetings that we have, and these meetings could be in person, they could be online, and they could be on the phone. If we think about our relationships, both with our minds and with our hearts, we will have richer and deeper relationships. We will connect with others, and we will be ourselves. It's the art of living well. In the next 2 episodes, we'll review how this applies to all the relationships we have. Episode 21. We'll look at those relationships that are incidental, the ones that we have because of where we live, where we work, and where we go to school, our casual relationships, and our closest ones. In the following episode, the 3rd of this series, we'll look at the relationships we have with our partners, our spouses, our parents, and our children. I developed this podcast to not only share my ideas about thinking with heart and mind, but to also help interested listeners make these ideas more a part of their life. At the end of each episode, I offer a series of exercises that interested listeners can use to help incorporate the ideas of the episode into their daily lives. This episode will do something different. Instead of exercises, I'll offer a short story, one that reviews what we covered in this episode and I believe sets the stage for thinking about the other 2 episodes in this 3-part series. A 3rd-year medical student came to my office to work with me. This was Naomi's first day in a clinical rotation. I asked her how she decided to go to medical school. "I was a psychology major until late into college," she told me. "And then I realized I was a psychology major because my mom was a psychologist. I was so impressed with her skills and abilities that I wanted to be just like her. And then I realized that my true love was in biology, and I knew that I wanted to be a physician." I asked what she wanted to do. She thought she wanted to be a surgeon. I said, "It's my experience that many who become surgeons have very difficult personalities. They can be conceited, standoffish, and cool to their patients. I understand where that comes from. What they do is a bit of an art. They see a problem, and they fix it. Some develop a sense of superiority because of their skill. You can avoid having that kind of attitude. You can learn to be a full human being and see the person who's got the problem you're addressing, not just the problem. You can stay centered and be true to yourself by picturing what your mother would be like for her patients, for her staff, and for all those she worked with, if she were a surgeon. As you develop an image of that, tailor it to who you are, and bring that into your relationships and into your practice, you will be yourself, besides being an excellent and skilled surgeon." This story appears in the show notes for this episode. Some listeners might like to reread it as a way to review what the episode covered. To further support interested listeners, on the website's homepage, which is ronschneibaummd.com, and it can also be reached by searching onbeinghappier.com, though onbeinghappier has to be one word, there is a picture with the words "thinking through relationships with heart and mind." The picture comes in a large size that can be downloaded and used as wallpaper for your tablet or laptop, and there's a smaller one that can be downloaded and used as a screensaver for your phone. Having such a picture in a place where I regularly see it helps me to remember a task that I want to be working on. If you have any questions about this episode, email me at ron@onbeinghappier.com. Write questions in the subject line. If you have any comments about this episode or past episodes, or if you have any thoughts about any potential future episodes, write comments in the subject line. And if you would like to receive a newsletter, which one day I will indeed send out, write newsletter in the subject line. I accept no advertising for this podcast, and I receive no financial support for doing this podcast. It is my gift. It is my way of saying thank you for what I've learned. I ask for your support in a different way, however. If you enjoy this podcast, share it. Share it with friends, share it with family, share it with colleagues, share it with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Because of your sharing, this podcast is heard throughout the United States and it's heard throughout the world. In fact, it's heard on every continent except for Antarctica. So if you're traveling to Antarctica, don't forget to listen to it there. I'd like to say hello to our friends who are listening to this podcast in Japan, in South Korea, in Thailand, in Denmark, and in Zimbabwe and Brazil. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, you subscribe to it. You can also go to where you listen to podcasts and rate it and review it. I enjoyed the time we spend together and look forward to the next time we meet. Until then, I wish you all my very best and be well, Ron.